SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two of the Morning After, live on this Wednesday right here on Sports Grid. Sirius XM, channel 159, the home for Sports Grid Radio. That's where you can listen to us here on the Morning After, and you're watching all across the Sports Grid network as well. I am Ben Stevens. Plenty to get to here in hour number two, including a look at Major League Baseball. We'll check in on the WNBA with SNY's Maria Marino as well. Wimbledon watch with the Whale capper, Drew Dinsick, and a huge update in conference realignment in college sports. What began last summer with Texas and Oklahoma leaving the Big 12 to the SEC, and with the Big 10 adding USC and UCLA in the years to come as well, all the ripple effects starting to be felt and how the rest of the college sports landscape will shake out. More evolutions in college sports to bring to you in just a couple of minutes. But we start in Major League Baseball. Some of the best arms in the game in action today, including the man known as the Show here on the Morning After. Oh my Ohtani, Shohei Ohtani, getting the start on the road against the Miami Marlins today for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And anytime Shohei is on the bump, you're going to pay for it. The Angels, a minus 162 road favorite, despite the fact the Fish have won six straight games, an over-under today of seven in his pitching matchup against Trevor Rogers. Now, Shohei Ohtani has the second-best odds, as we showed you, to win American League MVP, plus 260. He also has the fourth-best price to win the American League Cy Young Award right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook at 11-1. The two favorites, Shane McClanahan of Tampa, Justin Verlander of Houston, both of those numbers at plus 270. But that is the embodiment of Shohei Ohtani. And one of the reasons that Shohei has started to make his way back up this board and tighten the gap that Aaron Judge holds over him as your AL MVP favorite, even money for Judge right now at plus 100, is because of Ohtani's last two starts on the mound. Two starts ago against the Kansas City Royals, a career high 13 strikeouts for Shohei Ohtani. In his last start against the Chicago White Sox, 11 strikeouts for Shohei Ohtani. His K prop today against the Marlins, 7.5, and the under still has the juice on the FanDuel Sportsbook, which is interesting given his recent two performances. However, Miami middle of the pack in Major League Baseball, the 15th highest K rate against righties in the last month, only about 22% of the time striking out. But we go back to Ohtani here. He has gone over this number of 7.5 six times this year in six of his starts, and in five of those six starts, when he has gone over this number of 7.5, he has had at least double-digit strikeouts. So maybe you're feeling the Shohei momentum, and you look at the Show to have 10 or more strikeouts on the FanDuel Sportsbook, plus 360, that number here at the moment. Again, Shohei Ohtani, American League MVP, the second-best odds. American League Cy Young, the fourth-best price, and on the mound today, a minus 162 favorite against the Miami Marlins. That's where things stand in the American League. As we flip it over to the NL, a quick look at Corbin Burnes taking on the Chicago Cubs today as well. At home in Milwaukee, the Brew Crew, a pretty substantial favorite at minus 255. That's a hefty price, greater than $2.50. We'll dive into Burnes' numbers here in just a moment. First, a welcome to our Sports Grid Radio audience here, the second hour of the Morning After, live on this Wednesday. Sirius XM, channel 159, the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM. All of our terrestrial radio affiliates now in the fold as well. I am Ben Stevens. So the Brewers minus 255 at home today as your staunch moneyline favorites against the Cubbies. The reason for that is Corbin Burnes. His strikeout prop today, 8.5. Against Chicago. Now, here's the interesting thing about where the Cubs are. Not a great team this year, of course, in Major League Baseball. The seventh lowest K rate against righties in the last month, only 20.7%. but still the 12th highest all year long, 22.8%. So Chicago not striking out nearly as much in the last month as they have all Major League Baseball season long. So maybe when you see that big number of 8.5 for one of the best strikeout arms in all of Major League Baseball in Corbin Burnes, maybe you look to the under. Well, that's what the odds would indicate right now with where that juice is stacking up for Corbin Burnes at the moment in that 8.5 K-prop. Here's one thing to know, though, about Corbin Burnes. He has gone over this number of 8.5 in 3 of his last 7 starts. 2 of those 4 unders, he finished with just 8 strikeouts. But he has won 4 straight decisions and now taking on Chicago today. That is why the Brewers are a minus 255 favorite. But Corbin Burnes, Joe Musgrove, both looking up at Sandy Alcantara, where it stacks up in the National League Cy Young race. Sandy, another sensational performance yesterday. 8 innings of shutout baseball against the Angels last night. 10 strikeouts, only 2 hits allowed to the Halos. Did not offer up a single walk. He is 9-3 this year. A 1.82 ERA, your plus 155 favorite in the National League. Nearly now $4.50 in front of both Burnes and Musgrove. We also mentioned the return of Mad Max Scherzer. Great yesterday in his first start since May 18th for the New York Mets. 6 innings shutout baseball, a season high 11 strikeouts in only 79 pitches. Keep an eye, 60-1 yesterday in the NL Cy Young market. Now 45-1. All right, conference realignment in college sports continues on. We discuss it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Conference realignment continues to churn in college sports. Welcome back to The Morning After on this Wednesday, live right here on Sports Grid, Sirius XM, channel 159, all across the Spiz Grizz. I am Ben Stevens. Late last week, on a Thursday afternoon, we got a Big Ten bombshell that will be a seismic shift to everything we once knew about college sports, personified in college football, in what will be with the ever-evolving college athletics landscape. UCLA, USC, approved to join the Big Ten Conference starting in 2024. So it's not just those two premier programs from out west or the Big Ten, but what it means for every other league in college sports, including the Pac-12. And we learned a new update yesterday. The Big 12 in aggressive and already ongoing conversations to add 6 former Pac-12 members, or could be 6 former Pac-12 members, to their conference. As Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports reported yesterday, the Big 12 is in deep discussions to add 6 teams to their league. Those 6 teams include Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Oregon, Utah, and Washington. So if you're keeping track at home, if you add these 6 schools with USC and UCLA, that would be 8 of the 12 schools that will play their college sports within the Pac-12 conference this year. Because that's the very interesting thing about college sports at all times. We blend the optimism of the future, or at least the changing landscape of the future, with what is currently happening in the present. USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Utah, Arizona, and Arizona State are all members of the Pac-12 for this upcoming year. And as it stands right now, 2023, nothing has been finalized yet. No presidents and league chancellors have voted on the addition of these 6 schools, but the Big 12 is said to be working aggressively and quickly to add those 6 schools we listed. So what does that mean from the Pac-12? We'll try to have that conversation right now. That would leave just 4 schools: Oregon State, Washington State, Stanford, and Cal. Cal being, of course, UC Berkeley. What would they look to do? Would they be absorbed by the Big 12? Would the Big 10 look to add a couple of those good academic institutions like Stanford and Cal? might the ACC look for a partnership as well? Well, we had some more reporting from John Canzano yesterday that that might be in the cards. The ACC and the Pac-12 engaging in conversations about a loose partnership, ergo an alliance potentially between these two leagues, because the ACC is watching all that's happening right now in conference realignment and has to be a little bit nervous about its future as a Power 5 conference, although the Power 5 will shortly give way to a Power 2 or potentially Power 3. There has been some conversations with an update out of the Pac-12 yesterday that they have given the league an opportunity already to start engaging in media rights conversations for the Pac-12 to start its new TV rights deal. And maybe in that loose partnership with the ACC, they look for a conference championship game to be played in Las Vegas to make it more enticing to TV networks, because that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. Everything that you see here in conference realignment, the stark reality, whether you like the idea of the boogeyman in conference realignment in college sports or not, it comes down to TV money. The SEC with Disney and ESPN, the big deal they have already engaged in, and that was before Texas and Oklahoma joined the Southeastern Conference. You have USC and UCLA leaving for the Big Ten in 2024. The Big Ten already in conversations about its next TV rights deal, estimated to be greater than $1 billion per year, paying out the Big Ten Conference. That is the reality of college sports. It does not leave many of us feeling great at times. We love college athletics because of the tradition, the history, the regionality of it all, that you have those long-standing rivalries. Well, conference realignment shakes all of that up. But let's focus on the present as well, because as we know, this is for the future. Now, the Big 12 got that first bombshell last summer that their premier programs, Texas and Oklahoma, starting in 2025, as of right now, were departing for the SEC. The Big 12 has not wasted any time in adding member institutions to its conference, and they have been very aggressive in conference realignment. But for this year, as we look at the Big 12, the two favorites to win a conference title, those teams that are leaving for the SEC in a few years down the road, Oklahoma and Texas. OU, your favorites right now at plus 200. Texas behind them at plus 250. Plenty of updates on the Longhorns this summer as well. Arch Manning, the son of Cooper, the nephew of Peyton and Eli, set to join the Longhorns in 2023, which has led to a big bump in recruiting for Texas. But that, again, the future, the second best price on Texas right now to win the Big 12 this upcoming season. But as I mentioned, the Big 12 has been very aggressive already in adding teams to its league. Not just the rumored six from the Pac-12, but four teams coming from a variety of conferences around the country, set to join the Big 12 starting next summer, July 1st, 2023. Those four teams, BYU, UCF, Houston, and of course, Cincinnati, with the Bearcats appearing in the college football playoff just a season ago. As you can see here, those four schools don't have the most optimistic outlook for this upcoming year, according to the CFP National Championship odds. Since he was one of the final four teams competing for that national title a season ago, but maybe the Bearcats not destined to get back to the college football playoff this year, as the odds indicate, 250-1. The same price on Central Florida. Houston behind that, 300-1. BYU, 500-1. But those schools have garnered out a place in this marketplace, not just in the odds board and a competition level, but have fan bases that greatly care about college football and certainly college sports in general. A big ad for the Big 12 at that time, and now rumored to be aggressively looking to add Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and Colorado as well. That would give the Big 12 18 teams once Oklahoma and Texas depart for the SEC in just a few years. That's the Big 12. That's where an optimistic standpoint is for that conference. The Pac-12 doesn't have that same optimism at this moment, because look at the four best odds to win a Pac-12 title this year. all teams that will not be, it seems, reportedly, in this league in just a couple of years. Because as it stacks up right now, USC is your favorite to win the Pac-12 Conference, plus 150, followed by both Utah and Oregon, 3-1. UCLA, the fourth best price, 12-1. Washington, also rumored to potentially be one of those teams looking to join the Big 12, 17-1. Wazoo, with the sixth best price, is the only team as of right now that has not received any reports to be departing the Pac-12. They are 30-1. What will this all mean for the Pac-12? That is a very, very interesting conversation and not necessarily the most optimistic of pictures. In fact, it looks rather bleak at the moment for the Pac-12 conference. And all of this is happening. All of this landscape is changing right now in the early portion of July. Starting next month in August, by the time we get to the 27th of that month, week zero of the college football season, the first Friday night of the college football season could feature a potential future conference matchup between TCU and Colorado in the Big 12. Colorado used to play in the Big 12, by the way, the Big 8 back when it was there as well. The Horned Frogs, a 9-point favorite on that first Friday night. So that's the idea of college sports right now. Looking at the future, all that is changing with the presence in a new season on the horizon. Plenty more the morning after, up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on the morning after on Sports Grid, live on this Wednesday, Sirius XM, channel 159, all across the Sports Grid network as well. I'm Ben Stevens. Very pleased to welcome back a friend of the program here on TMA and at the Sports Grid network. It is Maria Marino of SNY joining us for some WNBA action on this Wednesday morning. Maria, thank you so much for taking the time to lend a little insight into the W on this Wednesday.
Of course, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course, it is always our pleasure. So the Connecticut Sun last night, Maria, a slight upset at the hands of the Dallas Wings. The Sun, the third best record in the WNBA, but go down on the road last night by 11 points. As you're evaluating the top teams in the WNBA, where we stand right now in the first week of July, how do you look at Connecticut?
I don't look at Connecticut the same way I did last year. And look, they haven't broken through. They haven't won a championship, but they've been consistently one of the best teams in the league for the last few seasons. And they had the best record in the WNBA last year. And of course, the MVP, Jonquel Jones. And it's not like they're in a bad spot. They're in a good place in the standings, but they just don't seem quite as crisp. And I noticed that Jonquel Jones is averaging about 5 points per game fewer this season than she did last season. So I wonder if some of that has to do with missing their usual point guard in Jasmine Thomas. But they don't, for whatever reason, they don't scare me in the same way as like Chicago or Las Vegas does. So they have a little bit of work to do.
14-8 straight up this year for Connecticut, the same record now for the Seattle Storm as well, going on the road against the worst team in the WNBA last night and winning by 22 points. Maria, as it is well known, one of the most legendary figures in all of women's hoops, Sue Bird, is playing in her final year for the Storm and in the WNBA. Do you think they're starting to feel a little bit of that mojo here and maybe trying to end it with a retirement tour for Sue Bird?
Definitely. And look, Seattle's in the mix and trying to win every single year, whether it's Sue Bird's last year or not. They have Breanna Stewart, who consistently plays like an MVP. But they do look a little sharper lately. Mm-hmm. And when Jewel Lloyd is hot, they are really tough to stop. I mean, sometimes the way she is as a scorer can be a little bit volatile, where here and there she might not, you know, drop 25. But when she is, I mean, they are so dangerous. They just have so many weapons. Now they just picked up Tina Charles, which was a complete shock, you know, coming over from Phoenix. And she's a former MVP. So they just have weapons across the board. I would say do not sleep on Seattle because they are always going to be in the mix. And because they have Sue, it's just that calming presence where, you know, she just knows how to get them out of trouble and to keep everybody flowing in a good way.
Sue Bird, only 2 points last night, 0-for from deep, but Tina Charles, 13 points, 8 boards off the bench for the Storm. Again, a 22-point win over the Indiana Fever. But everybody right now looking up at the Chicago Sky, the hottest team in the WNBA. They have won 5 straight games, but interestingly enough, Maria, only a 1.5-point favorite on the road this afternoon against Minnesota. Why do you think that number is so short?
Well, it might be a little do theory, if I'm being honest. And also, the Lynx, you know, they're looking a lot better. They're starting to find their rhythm. I think everybody has been surprised by their performance up to this point in the season. Of course, they were dealing with an injury to Sylvia Fowles, but they're one of the best coached teams in the league. They're consistently a playoff contender. So we have not heard the last from the Lynx by any means. I wouldn't be surprised if they get back in that playoff picture pretty soon and make a run here toward the end of the season. But I remember the last time I spoke to you about the Chicago Sky, and I was just saying, you know, it's so hard to repeat. And now I'm looking up and thinking, well, if any team can do it, it's the Sky, because they're so well balanced. And, you know, this could very well be the last season for Candace Parker as well. It hasn't been, you know, confirmed. It hasn't been the same way that we've heard about Sue Bird saying, this is for sure my last year, but she has alluded to it, Parker, that, you know, she's on the last year of her contract. She's not sure if she wants to continue, but I'm watching her the other day and I'm thinking she's playing like an MVP, and it's not like she has to put up a ton of numbers because they have so many weapons. But again, that leadership, that presence, she just makes good decisions with the basketball and they are humming.
So the best record in the W right now, the reigning WNBA champions, a 5-game win streak. You said last time, Maria, it's going to be hard to repeat. What do you think would be the key if Chicago is able to pull off that feat?
Just to continue doing what they're doing. I mean, Courtney Vandersloot just knows what to do with the basketball. She knows how to utilize every weapon on the floor. And what's interesting too is, so Sloot is, you know, that consummate point guard, but Candace Parker is like a point forward. So it's like, no matter who is handling the basketball, they have people that can distribute and make those good decisions and find people. And, you know, Allie Quigley hasn't had her best shooting year thus far, and we know how much of a sharpshooter she can be. So I expect she's only going to get better. And so if she's firing and you got, you know, Sloot and Candace Parker just slinging the ball around, they are going to be really, really tough to stop. And, you know, James Wade has proven himself as a really good coach in this league.
And they certainly have that pedigree. SNY's Maria Marino joining us here on a Wednesday on the Morning After, going around the WNBA right here on Sports Grid. So, Maria, right now, Las Vegas, a 0.5-game behind Chicago at the top of the table in the W. The Aces have lost 4 of their last 6 games. They host the New York Liberty tonight, a 10.5-point favorite for Vegas. But are you concerned at all by this recent stretch for Las Vegas, again, having lost 4 of their last 6?
I was going to say a little bit of concern. Clearly, they've come down to earth a little bit. They came out of the gates firing. And again, that's something you and I talked about back in, I think, May or early June, how they almost looked like a cut above everybody else. Now people are seeing the film. Now people are figuring them out a little bit. So they are in a bit of a position of vulnerability right now. I think what they need to figure out is that second unit, how to not have a sort of a drop off when their starters aren't in the game. But I trust Becky Hammon to be able to figure that out. And there is still something about this team that is very appealing, and it could be their time. You know, even before Becky Hammon arrived, they were knocking on the door the last few years. So I still feel like they're going to be just fine. It could just be a little bit of that midseason struggle. And when they come out of the All-Star break, I'm sure they'll be nice and refreshed. And it doesn't hurt that they're going to play the Liberty. And look, no disrespect to the Liberty at all. They're obviously double-digit underdogs for a reason. They've still had some trouble closing out games. They've lost three games in overtime. But that being said, I was killing them last time. I mean, they had a horrible month in May, but they really bounced back in respectable fashion, going 7-4 in June. Sabrina Ionescu, the Eastern Conference Player of the Month for the Liberty, and she's averaging, I think, 19-8-7. So they have begun to find that chemistry. And then, of course, you throw in the additions of both Crystal Dangerfield and especially Maureen Johannes. It has changed the entire complexion of this team, because now Sabrina doesn't have to worry so much about ball handling. She can do that, but there's a little bit of pressure off of her. Sammy Wickham doesn't have to be a primary ball handler, because she was a little bit prone to turn over the basketball. Now she can just kind of be that energy and that spot up shooter. And so I've been really, really impressed about the turnaround of this team, and they are gunning for playoffs. And I think they would be disappointed, and it would be a I wouldn't say shock, but it would be a major disappointment if they were anything less than a playoff team come the end of the season.
I think it's a great point, because the last time we spoke, it was about how the Liberty had struggled to begin this year. And then, as you mentioned, they had won 7 of their last 10. Now they have dropped 2 straight, a 10.5-point favorite on the road in Vegas tonight. A lofty total in that game, by the way, 170.5. So despite the fact the Aces have lost 4 of their last 6 games, and they're not technically in the first spot in the W right now, only a half game behind Chicago, the Aces still the favorites, though, Maria, at +150 to win this year's WNBA championship, ahead of Chicago by $1.50. Only about a minute left here. Do you think Las Vegas should still be booked as the favorite right now to win this year's title?
That's a good question. Just because, like you said, the Sky have been playing so well, should they be the favorites right now? It's been too short of a stretch, I think, to really be, you know, changing up the odds too much. But I love, you know, if I'm betting at this moment, I obviously like the Sky better, because it, you know, it's better value, and they obviously can do it. And I think I'm looking at the Storm there as well. I think, like I said, they're always going to be in the mix. So just as far as from a value standpoint, you can't really go wrong. I had talked about the Mystics last time we spoke. Again, great value. I still think we haven't seen the best that they have to offer, but they're clearly a different team when Elena Deladon is not on the floor. And that's a big thing that they're going to have to figure out down the stretch.
I like that +410 price on Seattle. Something about the Cosmos, Sue Bird's last year. Something stands out there. Maria Marino of SNY, thank you so much for your time on this Wednesday. More the morning after in Wimbledon Watch up next here on The Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on The Morning After on Sports Grid, Sirius XM, channel 159. I'm Ben Stevens, and live on this Wednesday morning at the All England Club at Wimbledon, we have matches currently going on. So we need the best in the business. That would be whale capper Drew Dinsick joining us here, NBC Sports Edge, and he gives us that edge here on Sports Grid. Drew, thank you so much for taking the time to go around Wimbledon with us on this Wednesday morning.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. And if you are just kind of now catching up with this tournament, you are in store for a pretty outstanding finish here. We have a couple of semifinals set up that look just absolutely spectacular. And right now we are winding down the quarterfinals on the men's side with 2 really, really good matches underway. So still a lot of tennis left to be played until we crown our champs. But, you know, the picture is starting to come into focus, surely.
One of those quarterfinals on the men's side currently underway. Rafael Nadal in action against Taylor Fritz. He is down right now live in the first set. We'll look at those live odds in just a couple of moments. A wild quarterfinal yesterday, though, as well, Drew, with Novak Djokovic going to five sets to come back against Jannik Sinner. He was down two sets to none before rallying for the final three. How would you try to summarize the performance as you saw out of the Joker yesterday?
So it was a tale of two halves of that match, surely. The first half, everyone who was paying attention, everyone who handicaps tennis was literally buzzing about what's wrong with Djokovic. To dismiss the level that Sinner produced. Sinner produced absolutely spectacular tennis through those first two sets. Every high leverage point, every time he was under duress, he found some insane shot that you did not know he had in his bag. But really the story of the first half was it just looked like Djokovic wasn't really all the way in it. Like something was not quite right with him. And he takes a break between sets two and three. He comes back out and he had a renewed confidence. He gets an early break. And honestly, the live market flipped on a dime where he was plus 150 dog to, you know, to run away favorite from that way on. And, you know, it's funny because down 0-2, but up a break in a third set to see a guy being, you know, chalk on the money line is rare. But with Djokovic, until he is facing match point and has lost, he is never out of a match. And you know, there is a level that he has obtained at this point on grass among all men's tennis players that basically has exceeded the next best greatest player. And that's crazy to say, because we've, you know, had eras where Sampras came through and was so superlative on grass with the serve and volley. And then Federer basically took the crown and was unbeatable at Wimbledon for, you know, a span of about 8 years there. And now Djokovic is going on a 26 match win streak on grass, has not lost on grass since Queen's final in 2018. And realistically, at this point, you know, it's kind of almost more on his racket than his opponents. You know, like we saw yesterday, it took him basically kind of deciding to flip the switch and then the match was over. And I think realistically, you know, that's the way that the semifinal certainly is going to play out. He draws an opponent in Cam Norrie, who, you know, to put it politely, very lucky to be here. Cam Norrie got placed in a very weak second quarter. And then to make matters even better for him, his main competition in that quarter, Hubert Hurkacz, got upset in round one, which basically cleared the path for him to get to this stage. And even, you know, with this favorable path, it still took him five sets in multiple stages where he was the better player to even emerge from this quarter. So I think with the kind of renewed focus you saw from Djokovic down the stretch against Sinner, you're going to see him put on a show and dispatch Cam Norrie in quick fashion in the semifinals.
The odds certainly back up what Drew is saying right there. Novak Djokovic, a minus 1,700 money line match bet favorite against Cam Norrie tomorrow in the first semifinal on the men's side. But as we finish out the quarterfinals currently going on right now, another update, Drew. Rafael Nadal down 5-3 in the opening set against Taylor Fritz. You can see the price before this match got underway. Nadal, minus 280 as your strong money line favorite. Right now, even juice on both sides, minus 115. How do these two match up against each other, Drew, and what can we expect the rest of the way?
Well, first of all, hat tip to our guy, Taylor Fritz, making a late run, an American making a late run in Wimbledon. We just don't see this very often, so it's cool when it does happen. Taylor Fritz, of course, hails from the San Diego area. He was a Rancho Santa Fe kid, always plays his best tennis in California for whatever reason. And if you look at past performances between these two players, the most notable head-to-head happened in California at Indian Wells in this year's final. And Rafa Nadal came through a match that was extremely competitive against Carlos Alcaraz in the semifinal. Drew Taylor Fritz in the final, people figured it was a fait accompli, not Nadal's going to win this title. Fritz got him, and he got him convincingly in that Indian Wells final. And that was sort of a, oh, Rafa Nadal's not undefeatable. Like, he's not, you know, he has some places you can attack. And Fritz was able to basically execute what I thought was a pretty perfect strategy for really how you can kind of make Nadal frustrated. Fritz has got a very strong serve. He's a tall kid. He's like 6'7". I keep calling him a kid. He's quite a bit younger than me, but he's been around for a little while here. He's got an outstanding serve. He's got a high level of consistency, and he's got a couple of grass titles to his, to his resume at this point. He's won Eastbourne now twice, including this season in the warm up to this Wimbledon run. And that's kind of where I think this match and really Rafa Nadal's chances were a lot overstated by the market. And now I could end up looking like a fool here. Taylor Fritz could end up getting, wiped 3-1 here after winning this first set. That's entirely possible. Nadal could go on and win this championship, and it would be the third and most improbable of the slams he will have won this calendar year, which is saying a lot because he was doubted at the first two as well. But he did not get a grass warm-up at all. He came into Wimbledon cold, and if you kind of go back through his history, coming into an event without a nice long on-ramp runway has not been a great sign of success for him. So even the fact that he is at this quarterfinal stage is somewhat of a credit to how soft his path has been, more so than the quality of tennis that he has brought. So I think he is very vulnerable, not just in this match, but certainly in a semifinal match, particularly if he draws Nick Kyrgios. And then, in a world where Nadal makes a men's final against Novak Djokovic, that's got 3-0 written all over it.
Nick Kyrgios right now tied at 3 games all in his opening set of his semifinal or of his quarterfinal matchup. He's a -380 live favorite on that money line. Nadal, after dropping that opening set to Taylor Fritz, has moved to your live underdog, +105, as I am seeing it live here on the FanDuel Sportsbook. So, Drew, oftentimes people look at just the money line for a match, even at Wimbledon. When you're breaking down a match and looking at the best bets that are out there, how do you approach those things? Would you look at an over-under for total games? Is there another market that stands out to you?
Yeah, so with a lot of these major tournaments, there tends to be a little bit of, at least in my opinion, there's a little bit of bias towards the favorites because a lot of players, the bettors at least, they like to, come up with money line parlays between all of the big favorites expecting, well, there's no way these guys can lose, right? And so I feel like there is a little bit of a tax to back the favorite in a lot of matches in these slams. And so my general approach is trying to make a case mentally, trying to make a case from a number standpoint to back the underdog. And, almost certainly like a Fritz in this case, the market made him about a 31% chance to win this match. My numbers said it was 37%. And so at that point, the question is, do you go ahead and play it on the money line, knowing that, you do that enough times, if you have a real edge, you'll come out ahead. Or do you try to find some other way to attack, knowing that you have value on the underdog? And so that's usually where I pivot next. If I'm looking at a price that's like 2-1 or 3-1 or higher, I'll usually pivot and say, well, what is the game's handicap that I can get? And in a lot of cases, if you have value on an underdog and they're kind of in this, middle range, +200, +300, the most fun way to attack it is to play the games over. There is a total on every match where it's basically how many games will be played. And if you have a live dog that's going to make it a match, it's going to be a tougher out than the market thinks, then there's a decent chance that there are going to be more games played than the market thinks. That's kind of my bread and butter strategy is, evaluate the matches, find the underdogs that are live. And then if I don't have quite as much of an edge on the money line, then I'll get involved and play the games over. That's where I went with this match today. And now I'm going to be sweating Taylor Fritz winning in straight sets. But the over was, I think, 38.5 here. I made fair total 41. I'm expecting a four setter at a minimum here. And in fact, if Nadal comes back and wins the second set, I won't be surprised. So, I think we're in for a long match here. These guys are very evenly matched. And, as I mentioned, I think Nadal was the rightful pre-match favorite. But I definitely gave Fritz a better chance than the market.
9 games in that first set, trying to push us to an over of that total somewhere around 38.5, 39.5 between Nadal and Fritz. So we have spoken about Novak Djokovic, who now is a -360 favorite to win the men's championship at Wimbledon. That final will be on Sunday. First has to get through the semifinal and then, of course, that championship match. Do you think, Drew, that Novak Djokovic should be such a strong favorite at the moment?
Yeah, I do. And I really, I mean, credit again, like, you know, Cam Norrie is, he's a UK based player. He's using the crowd and the energy to his advantage, kind of elevating his level of tennis whenever he's needed it. But he has spent a lot of time on court so far this fortnight. And in general, I don't think his game really measures up to what Djokovic is going to bring, particularly the way Djokovic kind of found that top gear against Sinner. So I think Djokovic wins this in straight sets. The current price for -2.5 sets for Djokovic is about -160. So that's more like a parlay piece than really getting a heavy piece of, you know, heavy action down on that. In particular, the games handicap for Djokovic is -7, -7.5, depending on where you're looking. And that feels actually about right. I think this is going to be a 6-3, 6-4, 6-3 type of match. So in the blind, I'm looking at about 8 games in favor of Djokovic. So it's pretty, pretty close. But this is one where I'm looking at the favorite or I'm passing. And realistically, I'll be somewhat surprised if anyone not named Nick Kyrgios can take a set off Djokovic from this point to the end of the tournament.
Which would include Rafael Nadal. So as we quickly go to the women's side of things at Wimbledon here, Drew, some of the big names that we expected to be around at this time, Iga Swiatek out early, Coco Gauff out early. Right now, the favorite, Simona Halep at +110. Quickly, only about 40 seconds left. Who's your pick to win the women's championship at Wimbledon?
So I go back to about middle of May. Ons Jabeur was playing the best clay tennis of her life, and she is at that time was my highest rated grass player on tour. I backed her every which way I could find to win Wimbledon in the 30-1 range. I think my average odds were about 32-33-1. And that at this point I'm holding out hope that Rybakina gives Halep an absolute marathon test in the semifinals, really wears her down, does some damage, and opens the door wide open for Ons Jabeur. Right now, I think there realistically are only two women that can win this, Halep and Ons. And, for my money, it's Ons.
30-1 to now +125. That's what the whale capper does. More TMA up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We close out our 2 hours together here on the morning after on this Wednesday on Sports Grid in just a couple of moments. Thank you for joining us here on TMA. All across the Sports Grid network is where you've been watching and listening on Sirius XM channel 159, the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM. I am Ben Stevens. So much across the sports landscape, even here in the opening week of July that we got to today. Wimbledon going on live right now. One final check of that live line between Rafael Nadal and Taylor Fritz. Right now, Nadal back up 2-0 in this second set, down 1-0 in the opening set. Nadal back to a -195 favorite. Hopefully you were listening there in our last segment just 7 minutes ago or so, when Nadal was +105 as your live moneyline underdog. That would have been a great best bet, but we'll go to the MLB Diamond for one final best bet on today's show. Before we say farewell, before we say goodbye, it's time for an MLB best bet. It's time for bye, bye, bye. The Los Angeles Dodgers and the Colorado Rockies tonight inside Dodger Stadium at Chavez Ravine. Trey Turner last night, although the Dodgers got their third straight victory over Colorado, was hitless. Trey Turner, who is batting above .300 this year, .307 to be exact, was held hitless for just the 12th time this season for LA. In all but 3 scenarios following a hitless performance so far this year, Trey Turner has followed that up with at least recording a single hit. I think he might get 2 tonight against the Rockies, and it is a ton of plus money. Two or more hits for Trey Turner tonight, plus 165. I also would love a total bases prop, but that's not out yet on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Keep an eye on that as a way to find a better price on Trey Turner against the Rockies tonight. The morning after, each and every weekday, live right here on Sports Grid. It starts at 9 a.m. Eastern time, each and every weekday morning. I'm Ben Stevens, and we'll talk tomorrow.